Hello and welcome to Udcast, episode 52. This is Head of School Dan Glass with you once again, recording live here in the Sound Lab at the Brandeis School of San Francisco. Happy 2018, a new year, the second of the new years that we are lucky to get to celebrate each year here at Brandeis. Gonna start this week with a poem, as we start every week with a poem. What's gonna be a little different this week is one of my resolutions this year is to spend a little bit more time writing, which might sound funny to any of you who are regular readers of the Word of the Week, since I certainly do write quite a bit, but I specifically spending more time in the practice of writing poetry, which is has been a constant companion on my journey through life for about going on 25 years now, and something that I don't always make the time for that I should. So in the spirit of helping me with my New Year's resolution, I'm gonna start 2018 with a poem that I wrote over the break that's a really more of a work in progress. Not there's nothing complete about it, but thought I would share it nonetheless. No kings but kingdoms, said chance, so find us in the empty peace of dreams. Lay us bodily down to safety, safe kids who can find mine when they need me in the night. Our bodies gone dark to the dreaming, lit as spinning planets hide spun stars. Against such tabernacles, tavernas, tatters, shattered patterns, or patinas oxidize our hours, charm our children, baking karaoke cupcakes in bowers. Amen, amen. Who I've become is not the sum of who I've been. I have at times not been integers at all, disintegrated by drugs or loss, centrifuged to near divinity. Open your endings to be unmeasured. And of course here, in proximity to sweet sleeping, we add new freedoms to our futures, new multitudes to our mirrored souls. And that's tentatively titled Hashkivenu. It's playing off a prayer. It's sort of a bedtime prayer in Jewish practice and tradition. So, you know, in recent years, I've gotten away from the practice of writing year-end best-of lists. It was something that I did for a number of years in various public formats, and always enjoyed doing it, sort of taking time toward the end of the year to reflect on the reading I had done, or the types of cultural products that I had engaged with, or cultural experiences I had engaged with, and giving that reflection written form. But for a few years now, I haven't done it, and I was inspired, though, over the break by a stray tweet by the basketball writer Shea Serrano, whose work at The Ringer I have been reading over the past several years and really enjoying. He wrote a book called Basketball and Other Things that came out in 2017, which I have not had time to read, although I'm putting it on my summer reading list for this year. And he shared in a tweet over the holiday break that he was surprised to see that his book showed up on President Obama's end of year best of list. And it was less the fact of President Obama's year-end best of list and more the enthusiasm of Shea Serrano's response to that made me think, you know, I really ought to get back to this practice of sharing what I read, since I read a lot and I read fairly broadly. So without further ado, I'm going to just share 10 books here that made memorable dents in my mental space in 2017, and share a little bit from each of them about what it was that made the book so memorable. So the first is The Story of Hebrew by Lewis Glinert. And I think I've talked about this book on the Yudcast before, and I'm never sure if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. But it's, you know, this is probably a book where I am at a kind of unique center of a Venn diagram in terms of my interests. There would probably be circles for linguistics and Jewish history and the role of text in cultural preservation. But really, the awe with which Glinert approaches this subject is quite infectious. He puts it at one point that, quote, the restoration of Hebrew was an act without precedent in linguistic and socio-political history. And the book tells the story of basically how Hebrew was quite intentionally kind of preserved in amber, such that it might in the future become a spoken language again. And of course now, certainly here at Brandeis, we take for granted to some extent the degree to which that is the case, that Hebrew is a living language. But the book really makes you appreciate how easy it would have been for Hebrew to have gone the way of Latin or something of that sort, just a language of ceremony and not at all one that people lived and engaged with in a day-to-day way. And I really enjoyed reading this book over the summer, and it gave me a new appreciation for walking the halls here at Brandeis and hearing people speak Hebrew to one another. The next book on my list is a really wonderful debut book of poems called Night Sky with Exit Wounds by Ocean Vuong. Really just appreciated the kind of almost raw sincerity of this collection. I'm just going to read a short excerpt from a poem called Torso of Air here. Suppose you do change your life, and the body is more than a portion of night, sealed with bruises. Suppose you woke and found your shadow replaced by a black wolf, the boy beautiful and gone. This is a collection that deals really honestly and artfully, simultaneously with sexuality, with national identity, with immigrant identity. It's really one I highly recommend. The next on the list is The Tiger, A True Story of Vengeance and Survival. How can you not love a book with a title like that? By an author named John Valiant. Valiant. This is one, I've been in a book club now. The one I'm currently in has been running close to 5 years, and I stick in the book club largely, well, first I just enjoy it. I enjoy the people in it, but it also forces me to engage with writing that I wouldn't pick out for myself, and I really enjoy that. I like the happenstance of coming across books that that enrich my understanding of the world that, you know, I never would have pulled off a shelf. And certainly The Tiger, A True Story of Vengeance and Survival, can't even say the title of that book without laughing, would be on that list. It is a fascinating account of the far eastern part of Russia, and the taiga and the tundra, where the Amur tiger, Amur, A-M-U-R, Amur, Amur tiger, maybe Amur tiger, lives. And it's this sort of in-between landscape where there are aspects of jungle and aspects of tundra. It tells the story of the true story of these towns, very small little hunting villages, and the effects of perestroika in the 90s on these communities, and then, you know, their engagement with this this animal that is almost otherworldly that stalks the landscape. Really fascinating book. It gave me a new understanding of parts of Russian culture that I really had not engaged with before. Another highly recommended. Next is Life on Mars, Tracy K. Smith, who's a poet laureate. I went back to her Pulitzer Prize winning collection from 2011, Life on Mars, which is sort of an extended elegy for her father. I hadn't read her work before and was really blown away just by her command of the language, her ability to engage with very complex human experiences in very straightforward language, and just the depth of her connection to her father that's on display in the writing is truly beautiful. So here's a short excerpt from a poem called The Speed of Belief. I didn't want to wait on my knees in a room made quiet by waiting. A room where we'd listen for the rise of breath, the burble in his throat. I didn't want the orchids or the trays of food meant to fortify that silence, or to pray for him to stay or to go, then finally toward that ecstatic light. Next up, and I think I said this, but this list is not really in any particular order, or it's in an in particular order, or an orderless order of some sort. But the next up is a novel called Sarmada by Fadi Azam. This is a gender-bending postmodern novel from Syria that transported me at times in a way that I honestly found uncomfortable to a very sort of oversaturated desert landscape, one that felt very familiar in some ways and in other ways felt totally unfamiliar. It's a very strange story, but one that really hung with me. The power of the human connections in these small desert town where most of this takes place, how different the world was and yet how similar it was as well. You know, much like the tiger, I left the book with a better understanding of Syria, and I was very grateful for that. And it was also just a very interesting read. Next up is Here I Am by Jonathan Safran Foer. This is a novel I read during the Passover break this past year, so my memories of it have the sort of tinge of Sayulita in Mexico, which is where we were when I was reading it. In some ways, this is a hard novel to read. It's it's very big. It tells in excruciating detail a very tough story about a marriage coming to its end. But its engagement with Judaism and Jewish identity and experience, I just thought was really profound. So here's just a quote that speaks to that. So much of Judaism today, regarding Larry David as anything beyond very funny, the existence and persistence of the Jewish American princess, the embrace of klutziness, the fear of wrath, the shifting emphasis from argument to confession, is the direct consequence of our choice to have Anne Frank's diary replace the Bible as our Bible. Because the Jewish Bible, whose purpose is to delineate and transmit Jewish values, makes it abundantly clear that life itself is not the loftiest ambition. Righteousness is. That quote comes from a sermon given by a rabbi in the novel at a kind of significant inflection point. And that just really, it spoke to me, the certainty of that statement and also the deep ambiguity that surrounds it elsewhere in the novel. Another great poetry collection. This one is another debut one, or at least new to me, a woman named Morgan Parker. The collection is called There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyoncé. I was drawn to it because of the title, honestly. As some of you know, I offered an elective on Beyoncé and poetry at one point. She's a pop artist who I find quite compelling. But the book actually ended up as a really powerful counterpoint to the turn in our popular consciousness in the latter half of the year toward a real critical awareness of sexual harassment and sexual politics in the workplace. Much of the book, I think, deals quite astutely with the male gaze and the female body. So this is another short excerpt from a poem that I thought was pretty, pretty lovely. All day men shout like lizards, sharp-tongued in the desert for salty flies. The sky's the boss of us. I can't spit when I try. In the heat, less is everything. Respect, power, mouths, sex. All of it is taken from me. I step into a volcano and melt like the witch I am. I want to be flawed all the way to bed. Wake up flawless. That poem is called It's Getting Hot in Here, So Take Off All Your Clothes. Great collection, though, of very interesting and I think very approachable poems. Next book is The Changeling by Victor Laval. I read everything that Victor Laval writes. He is a contemporary novelist, does these really fascinating takes that are sort of like a mashup of genre fiction and literary fiction, does a lot with African-American literary history and tradition. I would strongly recommend all of his books to all of you. He's done a few that look at sort of sci-fi and literary fiction, and some that are more in the vein of horror. And literary fiction, I think that is becoming more a space for him. The Changeling is certainly in that tradition, although it also engages with fables and fairy tales, notions of fatherhood in the African-American community in particular. I'm always super excited when a new book of his comes out. Like, it's my sort of ideal form of summer reading, and I got to read this one last summer, well, at family camp, which is one of my favorite places to do any reading. So it was a wonderful, wonderful confluence. I wouldn't say this is the best of his books, but I so enjoy his writing that the fact that it existed at all made for a good year of reading for me. Another book that I read at family camp last summer was Joseph Massey's book, Illocality. It's out from Wave Books, which is a press where he seems to have found something of a home. Really, Massey does these very, very short, almost imagist poems, and often very sort of landscape-driven. So a short selection from a poem called January Sheaf here. A kind of dream language attenuates our perception. How the landscape lists into chain link, parking lot, objects barely held onto their names. I picked that part of January Sheaf for its use of the verb list to mean sort of a slow falling to one side, because I ended my top 10 list with the Oxford Dictionary of English Etymology, which I got in physical form for the first time last year. I've been using digital dictionaries for a long time, and there is a wonderful online etymology dictionary, Etymonline, that's quite a lot of fun and a great resource. But I wanted to have the sort of material object of these etymologies, and I got this great edition from 1966 with this awesome, like, brown and pink and orange cover, very 1960s in its graphic design. And so, you know, to end my list here, I looked up that use of list, like, why do we think of list in the verb form, you know, not just to write a list, but also to fall slowly to one side. And what I discovered, because any engagement with etymologies is always a way of being curious about the world and always a practice of discovery. So what I discovered is that list once referred to pleasure or desire, and it was connected to the word lust. So when you lust after something, the way I might lust after a dictionary of English etymology, there's a tendency to lean in the direction of the object of your desire. And so that is why when something is listing, we talk about it as leaning towards something. And actually, fun side note for the fellow word nerds out there, that early meaning of list is the origin also of our phrase that's still in use, listless, right? We say someone is listless when they are without zest or spirit. You know, if you think about what we actually mean when we talk about a list, there's very little that makes sense there. But when you think of it in terms of pleasure and desire or that kind of spirit, and if you are without that, then yeah, you're kind of just sort of slumping there. So I wish you all zestful, spirited, listful weekends, my friends, and 2018's widened and enchanted by great reading. Shabbat shalom to all of you listening on Shabbat. Here's to a wonderful year of engagement. We'll see you again next week.